Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm responding to Nick's question about the relationship between work and ibadah. Exploring this question is one of the central doorways into exploring the issue of being human and of being at all. I think our first useful insight in this regard is that nothing exists for itself. Everything exists as part of a symphony of a greater whole that it participates in, that it makes a contribution to. So a flower takes things from its environment, but it also gives of itself into that environment. And it is the giving of itself into that environment that actually makes a contribution to the greater whole. In that sense, one can have a sort of an organic metaphor for all existence. There's no part of your body that exists for itself. Your kidneys exist to cleanse the body, the entire body. And yes, your kidney draws nourishment from the body, but the contribution that the kidney makes, if the kidney didn't make that contribution, the entire body would die. So there's no part of you that does not make a bigger contribution than what it draws from the whole system. It's true for your liver, it's true for your heart, it's true for any one organ that you have. Its contribution is bigger than what it takes. There's an overall bias towards abundance in how things work and how existence works. And each thing that exists contributes to that abundance. Each thing that exists, more than being here to get anything, is here to make a contribution. And that's true for human beings, therefore, also. Yes, when we're alive, we do require some things from life, but we're not alive to get anything from life. We're actually here, we've been brought onto this planet to give something, to make a contribution. And with us, with human beings, one of the key, the principal theaters where we make contribution is in the workplace, is in our workplace. If for no other reason than the fact that most of us spend most of our time in a workplace. If you think about a normal working adult, they would spend a minimum of 8 hours a day at work, and sometimes that's a 5.5 or 6 hour day. So of their waking time, a good proportion, if half, if not more, of their waking time is dedicated to working. It means, therefore, that the first place to explore where we contribute is at work. And the first sort of question we need to explore is why we are working. You can say, I work in order to earn a living. I am working in order to earn a wage to feed my family and to put a roof over their heads. If we examine what Nick does, Nick is a building contractor and he does alterations to people's homes. And in fact, one can say that it is true that Nick works in order to earn a living. But in the first instance, if there wasn't a contribution made, if Nick didn't change people's homes and give people better living spaces, there wouldn't be an income for him to live off. which means the first cause, the primary cause, is the contribution he makes to his customer, to his client. You can say that if you examine this issue of, you know, why does enterprise exist, why does working exist, and then you need to explore the question of, you know, do enterprises, does the enterprise exist in order to enrich the owner, or does the enterprise exist in order to make a contribution to the customer? Well, then we need to have a look at the transaction that's involved. In any transaction, there's a supplier, and then there's a supply side, rather, to the transaction, and there's a demand side to the transaction. And the supply side to the transaction exists for the demand side and not the other way around, which means the enterprise is there for the customer. The enterprise is there to make a contribution to the customer. That is what the enterprise contributes, and therefore, if you are working in the enterprise, that is what you contribute. You're here to make the world a better place by doing what you do. Now, one of the challenges that Nick could make to this argument is say, no, he's actually in the business of helping to find employment and enable employment for people who are destitute or struggling, which is what he does do. And so we work, I find work in order to help people who are out of work and need work. But I dare say that fundamentally, from his point of view as an owner of the enterprise, the fact that people are employed is really a byproduct. The overall reason for the enterprise to be there in the first place is to build, is to make people's homes better, and all work therefore, and the work of employees in the enterprise is to basically improve people's homes. That's the contribution they make. That's the reason why that enterprise is there. We're here to make the world a better place by our work. And how we understand is how we make the world a better place is to understand the transformation we affect for the people we are serving. Everything that contributes affects a transformation. There's a difference between the before and the after state of the person that's been, or the thing that's been contributed to. For example, there's if you look at the growth of plants in a pond, one of the things they contribute is they metabolize, or they absorb and the nitrogen in the pond water. And if they didn't do that, the pond would get toxic and other life in the pond would die. So there's a transformation in the before and after state of that element making its contribution from, in the pond case, too much nitrogen to acceptable levels of nitrogen. Everything that is alive, when it makes a contribution, that affects a transformation. That means there's a difference between the before and the after state. And if an enterprise is doing what it's doing, then you will be very deliberate. You'll really understand the transformation you're trying to affect for your customer and your client. And people would understand that the reason why they work is for that reason. So that's the first element of understanding the purpose of work. That's the purpose of work is, how do you make the world a better place? How do you transform the lives of people that you're working for? The second element of this, of exploring the issue of worship at work, in other words, over and above the issue of service, how else does one understand the issue of worship at work? And then this has to do with the issue of adab, and it has to do, and adab is really about doing things to do them well, not just to produce an outcome. And so there's two reasons why you can do anything. You can do something just to get it done, to achieve an outcome, or you can do something in order to do it well. That your attention is on the process rather than the result. Your attention is on doing to do it well rather than the goal of what you're trying to achieve. So, for example, you could A very simple example for me is washing dishes. When I was a younger person, and in fact, in my sort of adolescence, I used to think this was the most horrendous chore. I couldn't, I just did not like washing dishes. But then something changed at some point, I think in my 20s, where I realized that if you were very deliberate about how you wash the dishes, if you washed each dish and you washed it to wash, you first of all, if you prepared the washing up, you kind of stacked the dishes properly and you got all the elements that you're going to be working with in place. And then with each dish, you did what everything that you can do with that dish, and you made sure it was properly rinsed before it got stacked so it didn't have soap on it. And you gave each step of the process proper attention. Then, because the process then absorbed your attention, you moment by moment were trying to do the best that you could. That washing of the dishes can have quite a transformative effect on your consciousness. You really feel afterwards that it's almost like having made salah. I mean, it's really an experience of immense tranquility that you get from doing a job well. giving attention to the process, giving attention to each element of the process, doing it in such a way so that you do it not just to achieve an outcome, but you do it to do it well. Then when one does that, the moment you turn, you do anything with the intent to do it well, and you use the outcome almost as an excuse, as an opportunity to be doing the thing that you're doing, you introduce a reverential element into the thing that you're doing. You actually sacralize what you're doing because you're infusing the thing with human attention. Anything that human attention is a miraculous thing, and human attention actually does vivify it, creates life, it enables. So if it's like a good gardener, if you gave proper attention to the plants, if you gave proper attention to the garden in a sense responds, it feels that. There's an example that I have that comes to mind, this Kirstenbosch, which is I think it is the oldest botanical garden in the world. It's in Cape Town, and it's on the slopes of Table Mountain. And it's truly an extraordinary place. And if you sit in this garden, the combined effect of the place is to immediately draw you inward and quieten you and make you sort of aware of the closeness of the divine. And that, I think, is because generations of people, I mean, literally from the late 17th century, generations of people have loved that piece of land, have nurtured that piece of land. That piece of land has soaked up human attention, kind human attention, nurturing human attention, and it's vivified that landscape, and that affects people. It affects people who goes into it. That's the effect of doing things to do them well. You can see this if you just go to a place that's been well cleaned. Anybody who's been to the Zawiya would have met Auntie Munira. Auntie Munira has been with our family as a maid, as a domestic helper, since the mid-80s. My children grew up in front of her. She's very efficient at cleaning. She cleans my flat. She cleans my flat 3 times a week. When she has left, you feel it when you walk into the kitchen. You don't even have to see it. You could walk into the kitchen with your eyes closed and you can feel, but she's been there. Because the place is just, there's a sparkling kind of effect. And it doesn't take her a long time, but she really loves what she does, and you can see she loves what she does. So another point about this thing of doing things to do them well, this has got nothing to do with the sophistication or of the sort of the importance of the work that you, or the apparent importance of the work that you're doing. You know, this is, I mean, she's not finding a cure for cancer when she's busy cleaning our flat. But she infuses what she does with love. And that affects everything. You know, so there's this, you, even the most menial tasks can be deeply meaningful. You know, the difference between a meaningful and a meaningless task is not how menial it is. It was, in the first instance, does the person involved imbue it with meaning? And what imbues meaning? It is human attention. It's a human, your ability to make the thing that you're doing significant. And, you know, if you're doing something just in order to get it done, if you're doing something just to achieve a goal, the thing that you were doing, the things that you're working on, are not significant. They are means to an end. The significant thing is the outcome. But if you invert that, you say, no. This outcome that I'm trying to achieve is an excuse for me to spend time in this moment here, is to spend time giving attention to this particular thing, giving loving attention to this particular thing, doing this particular thing in the spirit of wanting to do it as well as I can, then you change everything. Then the world changes. Then you change. The person who starts cleaning a room with this use of your attention is not the person who finishes the room with this use of their attention. The person changes. Every time you do something in the spirit of sacralizing it, if you do something in the spirit of being reverential in doing it, then when you're finished, it is like you've done salah. You are different. You are deeper. You are quieter. You are kinder. You are more compassionate. You're a more elevated being. So in this sense, then, the purpose of work actually is to transform the worker. So we can say that we enter into this process of worship at work, first of all committing, making the purpose of work not ourselves, but to make a contribution to others, find an intent which is about the transformation we're trying to make to the world. In the second instance, we do the work with the mindset of sacralizing the work. We're doing it to do it well. We give our attention not just to the transformation we're trying to make, but we use the transformation we're trying to make as an excuse, as an opportunity to fully dedicate our attention to the thing that we're doing. So we're doing it to do it well. And when we do that, the real extraordinary thing that happens is that we change, and that we discover that in the process of service and in the process of committing ourselves to something greater than ourselves and making our life an endeavor of doing that, the product of doing that, paradoxically and astonishingly, has been ourselves, that we change. And this is why we're here. In this sense, our working is a gymnasium to enable ourselves, to make us greater, so that we can die with eloquence. May Allah grant us nearness to Him. May He grant us annihilation with Him. In Him, may He grant us death before we die. In Allahu wa malaikatuhu yusallu ala nabi. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu sallu alayhi wa sallimu taslima. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك نبينا وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين.